Now time for a catch-up on stories making headlines across the world on this week's World Report with Justin McCarthy.
Good morning. On today's programme, the Lebanese cultural festival where East meets West and making electric car batteries in the UK. But first we go to Prague. There was incredulity recently when the Czech Parliament passed an amendment to the road traffic law containing a series of changes to the rules of the road, with one in particular which grabbed the headlines. In a country where road safety has been poor, the government wants to increase the motorway speed limit in strictly defined stretches to 150 kilometres per hour. Rob Cameron has more from Prague.
The Czech Republic, where car is king and road safety is OK. Rather, the roads are not quite as bad as they used to be, but there's still lots of aggressive tailgating, risky overtaking and speeding. To be fair, the situation has improved a bit in the past decade. The roads are smoother, the cars are safer, the drivers are slightly better. When you look at the latest European road death statistics, the Czechs, with 50 fatalities per 1 million inhabitants, are now somewhere in the middle. Compare that with Romania, 86 deaths per million inhabitants, Bulgaria, 78 deaths per million, or Croatia, 71 deaths per million. But also compare that to the top dogs, Sweden, 21 deaths per million, or second place, Norway, 23 deaths per million, Iceland, 24 deaths per million, or indeed the EU average of 46 deaths per million. So, with road safety and general road culture slowly improving, but not really where it should be, the centre-right government now wants to raise the speed limit, albeit on selected stretches of motorway, from 130 kilometres per hour to 150. That would make Czech motorways the second fastest in Europe, faster than Bulgaria and Poland's 140, and beaten only by Germany's unlimited Autobahn, or some bits of them at least. The Czech Transport Minister insisted the faster stretches would be strictly limited to improved sections with electronic displays that can reduce speed according to visibility, traffic density, and so on. Those are currently in the minority. He also went on to make the perfectly valid point that motorways everywhere, not just in the Czech Republic, are generally far safer than other roads. In 2020, he said, there were 33 fatalities on Czech motorways, but this was just 7% of the total 460 deaths on the roads. But road safety campaigners are shaking their heads in disbelief, pointing out that the overall trend across the globe is to reduce speed, not increase it. The lower the speed, the less tragic are the consequences of any accident. That's a simple fact, they say, and one borne out by all the statistics. Even the head of the Czech Traffic Police agrees, saying he's dumbfounded by the proposal, which must still be approved by the upper house and signed by the president. But even then, there may still be a few final bumps in the road. Even if it becomes law, it may still fall foul of the mighty Czech bureaucracy. Each stretch of concrete deemed fit to speed down at 150 kilometres per hour must first be signed off by a safety watchdog called the Road Administration Authority. And as a result, the total number of kilometres where Czech drivers will be able to put the pedal to the metal could be extremely modest indeed. For World Report, this is Rob Cameron in Prague.
To Lebanon next, and the town of Baalbek, which hosts one of the oldest cultural events in the Middle East, the Baalbek Festival, which is almost 700 years old and brings together music and culture from East and West. Hannah McCarthy attended the festival to find out more.
I'm driving along the main road to Baalbek in Lebanon's eastern Bekaa Valley. The town lies beside the ruins of what was once known as the City of the Sun. And during Roman times, thousands of pilgrims flocked to the two huge and mysterious temples there. Today, the road to Baalbek is dotted with fresh red and black flags from Hezbollah, the Shia militant group with a hold over this part of Lebanon. At one point, I'm slow to let a large white SUV pass me on the road. As the car overtakes me, a young girl in a black chador sitting in the passenger seat scowls at me. She points her hand like a gun and fires her finger. Located just 20 kilometres from the Syrian border, Baalbek is a convenient base for Hezbollah, while smuggling and drug trafficking have long lined the pockets of local residents and criminal gangs. Armed clashes between gangs as well as the security forces make the area a relatively high security risk, and several embassies have banned their diplomats from visiting the town. Except for tonight, when the annual Baalbek Festival is on and a heavy military presence is seen in the town. The Baalbek Festival is one of the oldest cultural events in the Middle East, where singers like Ella Fitzgerald and Fairuz have performed between the Temple of Bacchus and the Baalbek Acropolis. The almost seven-decade-old festival seeks to forge a link between the West and the East, showcasing musical talent from the Middle East as well as other countries. Before the concert starts, I sit on the balcony of the historic Palmyra Hotel overlooking the Baalbek ruins. Visitors will feel like they're stepping back in time, or perhaps into an Agatha Christie novel. Not much has changed in the hotel since it was built in the 1870s by a businessman from Constantinople when the region was still part of the Ottoman Empire. While different regimes have come and gone from this area, the Palmyra Hotel has remained a constant, not even closing during the bloody civil war that raged across Lebanon from 1975 to 1990, although kidnappings didn't help business, admits the owner, Rima El Husseini. Today, the hotel is something of a time capsule and in need of renovation, something even Rima accepts. The devastating economic crisis, COVID, and the war in Syria have all stifled the tourism trade in Baalbek. But for the four nights of the Baalbek Festival, the hotel comes back to life as festival goers coo and take photos of the artifacts dotted around the hotel that at times makes it feel more like a small museum. As the sky begins to darken over the city of the sun, I walk to the entrance of the Baalbek ruins. We go through several security checkpoints before arriving at the reception area that has been set up to serve wine and food to the upmarket Beirutis who come for the festival. As people sip Kassara wine and wander around the ancient Roman ruins, there's the faint sound of gunfire in the background. Despite all the Lebanese soldiers in the city that night, Hezbollah is keen to remind everyone who is in control of Baalbek. The militant group staged a press conference at the Baalbek ruins after one of the previous concerts. Eventually, we hear an announcement to take our seats facing the Temple of Bacchus for tonight's performance of Voodoo Cello by the French singer Imani. The lights dim, and along with eight cellists clad in white jumpsuits, Imani arrives on stage and begins to sing with her deep, soulful voice. "Welcome to Lebanon, Imani," screams one attendee. The old world of the Baalbek ruins meets the modern world as Imani performs covers of Radiohead and Madonna inside a pulsating LED square. The crowd is enthusiastic, standing to dance at regular points. At one point, the Temple of Bacchus goes red, and the cellists and Imani form a line as she begins to sing Take Me to Church by the Irish artist Hozier. "My lover's got humour, she's the giggle at a funeral, knows everybody's disapproval, I should have worshipped her sooner. If the heavens ever did speak, she's the last true mouthpiece." After the concert ends, the crowd spills out of the ancient ruins and back into modern-day Baalbek. And like the pilgrims who visited the temples in Roman times, they begin their journey home. For World Report, I'm Hannah McCarthy in Baalbek.
Finally, we go to the UK, and the automotive giant Jaguar Land Rover has chosen to build a plant to produce batteries for electric cars there rather than in Spain. JLR's parent, Tata of India, will build the factory in Somerset in the southwest of England, and the project could create 9,000 jobs. It comes as Europe's car manufacturers are rolling out more electric vehicles, but struggling to make enough batteries for EVs, and that means sourcing more of them from Asia. But as Russell Padmore reports now from London, that risks financial penalties from the European Union for failing to meet targets to use enough components made locally.
The multi-billion investment from Tata will give a boost to the UK's automotive sector, which employs hundreds of thousands at factories operated by companies like Nissan and Toyota or Stellantis. The days of mass car manufacturing by British brands like Austin or Morris ended decades ago. The move by countries, including Ireland, to combat global warming means encouraging more of us to buy an electric vehicle. But making those EVs means producing batteries to power them, and that's challenging the industry in Europe. Not enough of them are made in this part of the world, so most of the supply comes from Asia. That creates a major headache for manufacturers, which have to abide by the rules of origin set out by the European Union and UK. From next year, cars exported in both directions between Britain and the EU must be manufactured with at least 45% of locally made components. Otherwise, a tariff of 10% is applied. That could make electric vehicles more expensive to buy or reduce profits. Last January, the financial collapse of British Volt, a company that was set up to make batteries here, caused the UK automotive industry to veer off course. It raised the fear that without a thriving battery industry, companies would have to move production of EVs to the European Union, putting jobs in Britain at risk. Stellantis, which controls the brands Citroën, Fiat, Peugeot and Vauxhall, warned that it might have to abandon production of electric vans at a British plant unless the UK renegotiated its post-Brexit trade deal with the European Union. Brexit and its ongoing challenges are still a hot-button topic here. Other automotive giants with British factories like BMW, Nissan and Toyota, which export cars into the EU, are also concerned about the lack of battery production. Manufacturers in Germany also want Brussels to rethink its rules of origin until production of batteries is ramped up in Europe to reduce reliance on Asia. The shortage of batteries is also troubling for countries like Ireland. The government's target of having almost a million EVs on Irish roads by 2030 is ambitious, but even harder to achieve if there is a shortage of batteries for electric cars, as well as increased prices because of the EU's rules. The British success in convincing Tata's Jaguar Land Rover business to start making electric car batteries in the UK instead of Spain will prove very expensive for taxpayers. The operation will get subsidies of hundreds of millions. It's worth noting that Tata has extensive steel manufacturing plants here in the UK, especially Port Talbot in Wales. The government is ready to offer hundreds of millions to help upgrade and decarbonise the steel operations. Those subsidies and the funding for the EV battery plant are linked, so the eventual bill could reach almost €1 billion for British taxpayers. The world's automotive companies are investing billions into new technology to make the road towards greener electric cars smooth. But the worry about sourcing batteries for EVs in Europe, while countries in Asia are dominating supply, means the car makers are on a bumpy road, a route that could lead to additional taxes on their cars, which would either cut profits or make them more expensive to buy. To ensure adequate supplies, companies like Volkswagen are investing in their own battery-making operations. The industry is also investing in mining companies that produce lithium, a metal which is used to manufacture batteries for electric cars, as well as computers and mobile phones. Most of the world's lithium is mined in Chile, Australia, Argentina, and notably China. The security of supply of this metal is another challenge for the automotive industry in Europe. It's unclear where the new Jaguar Land Rover EV battery plant in Somerset will get its supply of lithium. The road ahead for EVs is not as smooth as the automotive industry in Europe would like, but electric vehicles are the future, and that means the car manufacturers have to ensure they have enough batteries. This is Russell Padmore in London for World Report.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/worldreport or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.